Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show.
And welcome to the 228th edition of your economic forum show entitled Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Today's show, Spring 2016 Update. Before I begin, remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. These expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this radio station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money. As money does matter, and matters of money affects us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, and controls our economy, our country, our planet, and in some way or another, controls of every way you live your life. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. How is everybody today? Thanks for joining me on communities radio stations nationwide. And, well, another day where I don't have to tell you the market is down horribly. That makes three shows in a row. Are we in a new rally? We shall see. Yeah, so here we sit. And the Dow at 16,908. Up 890 today, 8.90, not much. Starting to look at 17,000 again. So what do you think about that? Will it go down? Will it go up? I don't know. It's interesting. Of course, the first few weeks of 2016 witnessed a historic fall for the start of the new year. Investors ran for the exits as each new day seemingly brought more pain in portfolio balances. February and now March, starting off with some relative calm to the sell-off, leaves us wondering what went wrong and what should we expect in the spring of 2016 in our markets. Of course, the theories abound as to what caused the sell-off, from the Federal Reserve raising rates to the plunge in oil prices. Regardless of what caused that, the fact remains is January is behind us, and now February is behind us, and what couldn't we expect in the spring? It's an election year. Theory goes the Federal Reserve, who controls our monetary policy here in the United States, is not beholden to the political whims and wishes of Washington. Some would argue otherwise. Would the weight of which party rules the country after November's election have enough sway to convince the Fed to ensure market stability? Are the Fed's hands tied in addressing any market weakness to ensure it does not give the appearance of moving in the interest of those in power? Market pundits offer up improving economic statistics as proof the economy is improving. And if so, the markets will eventually reflect that. Remember, markets eventually reflect reality. But its day-to-day movements are only the sum of all the beliefs of all the investors in it at any given time. Some are pointing out to the figures put out by the Bureau of Labor Statistics showing an improving economy. That's Washington's official mouthpiece. And, of course, others say rising deficits and a halt to the mandatory sequester cuts may also cause investors to wonder if Washington will get its spending under control. However, that talk has seemed to have disappeared from Main Street. And in Washington, there's no talks of spending controls now. U.S. dollar has strengthened some. And the talk of more interest rate increases. They meet again, the Federal Reserve, in March. A couple of weeks from now, we're going to see what they're going to do. Opinions vary. Can they raise rates again? Will another increase in rates cause the markets to spiral downward? Or will they hold off? They were talking about negative interest rates to even lower them below zero, which is kind of funny. They talked about them right after they raised them in December. Price of oil is trying to stabilize. The low price of oil has put more money in your pocket, of course. That's a good thing. But these prices are so low, it's causing economic pain in companies that produce oil. And that might cause economic pain to financial institutions that lent those that produce oil money. The thinking goes with oil in the dirt. Some oil companies are going to having a hard time meeting their obligations due to those low prices, and that might bleed into the other debt markets as defaults in one area tend to cause contagion in the others. There are indeed many currents that are pulling this market to and fro. Right now, it seems to be rallying, and so we'll see if that continues. Things in motion tend to stay in motion. Which direction, of course, is for another day. And there's a lot going on. The Federal Reserve, of course, continues to push and pull levers and buttons and try to control the economy in the direction it wants to go. 7 years after the worst crash since the Depression, here we sit, markets below their all-time highs, and central banks looking at their control panels and wondering what to do next. Federal Reserve has a few tools in their bag to move the economy where they want it to go. They have low interest rates, or negative interest rates. Quantitative easing, which is purchasing stuff from financial institutions like toxic mortgages, and on occasion bailout funds and other money creation programs. Common thread of all those programs is to relieve distressed asset balance sheets from financial institutions. Make it easier for businesses and individuals to borrow money. And although the Fed can buy some stressed assets from the banks until the cows come home, which makes the bank's balance sheets look better, making money easier to borrow for everyone has its limitations. If the banks start to lend more money, will consumers borrow it, or are they maxed out? Is this the problem we see today? Is there an inflection point where the debt loads are so high, people won't take on any more debt, no matter how low interest rates go? 2008 and 2009, debt levels had reached critical levels on many fronts. Banks were knee-deep in debt, and Americans were knee-deep in debt, and indeed citizens around the world were knee-deep in debt. A lot of that was because everybody bought a house, and when you buy a house, you borrow money. Generally, when things go awry in the debt markets, the common market solution is to let some of that debt go belly up. And whoever holds that debt, they suffer, and it teaches them a lesson. However, the Feds decided that they didn't want to do that, and so they bought up distressed assets from the bank and paid off some of your mortgage, maybe helped you buy a new car, dropped interest rates to zero again, which is what they did after the dot-com crash, or very close to it. If they can't get people to borrow money, even though it's out there to borrow, it may be called pushing on a string, which means here's the money, but the consumer won't take it. Without the consumer in the economy, of course, the economy may go nowhere fast. Central banks continue to seem to be operating on the notion that any spending is good spending, whether it's fueled by debt or not. Interest rates are almost as low as they can go. They're about a quarter of a percent, quarter to a half a percent. You don't get much in a bank account anymore. But Janet Yellen, your Federal Reserve chief, did talk about dropping interest rates into the negative. Whoa. Negative interest rates means that if you put money in the bank, you get less back. Put $100 in, you get $98 back, or whatever the ratio would be. In other words, the banks actually charge you to keep money on deposit. Now, the negative rates that she's speaking about would probably not apply to the retail saver like you. It would only apply to large institutions that park huge sums at the central banks. Right now, when they park huge sums at the central banks, Federal Reserve being the one here, they pay those banking institutions interest on the money they deposit, which is kind of odd. The fact that they want the banks to lend, then why are you paying them to keep money in the Federal Reserve and not lend it out? So if they go to zero or they go negative, then of course the banking institutions of the world would have an incentive to take their money out of the Federal Reserve and lend it out to you and I. That's the incentive about negative rates. I find it odd that Janet Yellen, the Federal Reserve chief, after raising rates in December, is talking about negative rates already. It remains to be seen, and an argument could be made against the Fed as to what negative rates might accomplish. Would they force the banking institutions to take the money out of the central banks and lend it out to you and I, which just creates more debt? Does the consumer continue to borrow and borrow and borrow just to fuel the economy? How much debt can the consumer take on? The Fed can make all the money it wants, but short of sending out free checks to everyone, will the consumer want to borrow it? With rates already near zero, we may already have our answer. Debt levels do not seem to be increasing, at least on the consumer level, drastically. And prior, years prior, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years prior, we were borrowing at 5 and 6% as normal rates. Of course, if it was 5 or 6% normal and they dropped it to zero, people would borrow like crazy. But they keep dropping these rates. People keep borrowing. Well, maybe we've reached an end of borrowing. Maybe people just won't borrow anymore. So, on an opinion article submitted to me by Mr. Haynes, written by Speaks, there's an interesting article here I want to read you. It's an opinionated article, of course, opinion of the author. And he goes on to say, making sense out of what is going on in the economy and the stock market is never easy. I agree with that. But it is particularly difficult at the time. I agree with that as well. 2015 was indeed difficult. But 2016 saw panic selling. And the media loved to portray that as dire. The author goes on to continue to say that at the moment we are in the midst of a perfect storm that has six distinct components. The Fed persists, the central bank of our United States here, persists in maintaining its stance that it expects to raise interest rates again here in March, even though it may know that the economy is not strong enough to deal with higher rates. Indeed, when it raised rates in December, you saw what happened in January. The stock market knows that the Feds can't raise rates, yet the Fed's refusal to come out and admit that its previous announcements were premature makes everyone nervous. There's always a chance that the Fed will do something stupid, says the author. Fear induces panic selling, a perfectly normal human reaction. Around the world, investors may be realizing that all the moves by the Fed and other central banks to stimulate growth has not been as effective as expected. Therefore, announcements of future possible monetary easing may not have the desired impact of stimulating financial markets. My comment here is that a couple days ago, I read an article. It came out from Bloomberg that said that the market had run 300 plus points a day or so ago on the hopes of future global stimulus, more QE, more low interest rates. We don't know if that was the reason the market ran 300, but that's what at least one of the news articles that I read had indicated. And this author goes on to say there is a great concern over the banking systems around the world. Banks make money when there is a nice spread, a difference between what they charge on loans and what they pay to get the money to loan. Banks were counting on the Fed raising rates, which increases the spread, the margin, the markup, and now are possibly having to deal with disappointment. On top of that, so says the author, they are seeing a rapidly increasing number of defaults on loans they have made in the energy sector, something that I just spoke about, meaning that their lending base may be reduced. Consequently, U.S. banks have been taking a beating, and some banks are very near their stock levels where they were during the crisis. Overseas, so the article goes on to say, European banks are reporting terrible results. And the absurdity of negative interest rates, so says this author, is spreading to other nations. And in Japan, indeed, Japan just offered a 10-year note with 2.5% negative paid back in over 10 years. So that would mean what? 0.25% negative. So people are losing 0.25% a year if they buy a Japanese government note of 10 years. That's a negative interest rate. You don't get back as much as you lent out. Supposedly, negative rates help the interest rate spread. But of course, it implies that customers are so afraid of the markets, they would rather sacrifice a little bit of their money, 0.25% a year, in the bank than risk it in any sort of lending or investment. When people are that fearful, they avoid stocks, bonds, and real estate investments. The Japanese offering was oversubscribed, or you could say undersubscribed, where there were more buyers than there were bonds being offered. It's odd that there's such a demand for a negative interest rate loan. Remember, negative rates mean when you loan them money, you don't get back as much. Chinese banks, meanwhile, have long been suspected, so says this author, of publishing somewhat fictional financial statements. But as China's economy has slowed, the issue of non-performing loans has become a greater concern, which means loans are going belly up. Additionally, strength in the U.S. dollar is causing problems for American exporters because as the dollar goes up, our goods that we sell overseas get more expensive. This hurts profits of U.S. multinational corporations and makes debt servicing more difficult for those whose income is not denominated in dollars. There is also a glut of oil, meaning an excess supply over demand. I read out on CNBC that the U.S. storage facilities for oil is almost full, if not full. Obama lifted the sanctions on Iran, so now the Iranians will be able to dump oil on world markets again, adding to the glut. Additionally, this article goes on to say there is worry that storage capacity is reaching a limit, which is what I just said, at which point there's likely to be dumping of oil at lower prices just to get rid of it. Price of oil has fallen to extremely low levels, pushing an increasing number of producers of oil to or near bankruptcy. Since energy is very capital intensive, which means it takes a lot of money to get it out of the ground, much of the getting it out of the ground has been funded by debt. Those that lent oil companies money are seeing an increased amount of loan defaults, markdowns. This puts more pressure on the banking system since defaults reduce lending bases, which means that if you don't get paid your money back, you don't get to loan it out because you don't have it. This cramps the style of banking institutions to lend into other sectors of the economy. If I don't get paid on my oil loan, I can't loan you to make cereal for a new factory. One of Warren Buffett's most quoted remarks is, "When the tide goes out, we find out who's been swimming naked." There's my fellow broadcaster, Mikhail. He's laughing at the joke. Many of the glamour stocks of the recent past were selling at valuations that were based on hopes and dreams rather than reality. In the current stressed environment, a more sobering reappraisal has led to shocking sell-offs. Many investors, seeing their favorite stocks being crushed, rushed to sell everything, lest the signal of the beginning of the end of the world. However, as I said, last part of February and first part of March has seen the market climb 1,000-something points. We're sitting at 16,908 today, Thursday. You may be hearing the show at a later date. But Thursday, March 3rd, 2016, in the year of our Lord, at 12:27 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, that's where the market stands. Many stocks took a drubbing last year, and many more are being beaten down this year. Any whiff of possible bad news sends shares down sharply. What's an investor to do? So says this article. Another popular quote of the sage of Omaha, Warren Buffett, that the time to be fearful is when everyone is overly optimistic, and the time to invest is when everyone is fearful. Looking forward in this article, the author says, let's examine of the six conditions that are coming up. The Fed is either not going to raise rates in March or raise them, only a tiny bit to save face, much like they did, in my opinion, as they did in December. Rates are currently low in the belief they are likely to stay low for a long time. Low rates are positives for stocks once the uncertainty lifts. Presidential candidate Bernie Sanders is probably right that the banks are too big, the big ones anyway. They are, however, less likely to fail than they were in 2008. No one likes the new post-crash regulations, but unchecked, the banks would just make the same stupid mistakes again. I might disagree with that statement. The banks were not unchecked in 2008, 2009. The Federal Reserve had the power to do anything they wanted. They can shut a bank down if they want. If they see too easy lending, they can raise rates. Post-crash regulations, in my opinion, were not necessary. They should have enforced the regulations before the crash. Remember, the Federal Reserve can do anything it wants to the banking sector. They are the master. As for China, the central bank is likely there going to have to bail out some of their banks. However, the central bank in China has a lot of money. It's important to remember that while the Chinese economy may be slowing, it is still growing faster than ours. This article says that concerns about what happens in the world if China slows down are perhaps overdone. While the U.S. economy is stronger than most, the rise in our dollar, our currency, is more rooted in fear than in extraordinary economic strength. In other words, the dollar hasn't been rising, according to this author, because of our economic strength, rather than it's been rising because of the fear that nobody wants to buy anything but U.S. dollars, because they're still considered the safest investment in the world. And with the Fed constantly talking about raising rates, if you buy anything in dollars, you'll make more money if they raise interest rates. Higher rates make U.S. government bonds more attractive. That's how that connection is together there. The causes of the oil glut are many and complex. However, despite all the pain, the energy sector will come back, so says this author. Low prices will result usually in a curtailment of unprofitable drilling until supply and demand come into balance. That's basic economic theory, not so much of an opinion. When prices drop so low, people stop producing. They can't make any money at it. This reduces the supply. And when you reduce the supply, if the demand stays the same or goes up, that balances prices and raises them back up. Despite all the hoopla about alternative sources of energy, the world will still be heavily dependent on hydrocarbon fuel over the remaining lifetimes of most of us. It will take time, however, and there'll be big winners and big losers as things shake out. But the setback in the energy sector will shake out, in the opinion of this author. Some stocks, that he goes on to say, are always in a bubble, but bubbles always burst. Opportunities, however, can be found in stocks which fall into the category of babies being thrown out with the bathwater. In a broad-based sell-off of a stock market, some stocks are sold off just because the market is going down. So you might be able to find good buys in a beaten-up market because all stocks usually go in concert with each other. and some good stocks may be sold to extremely low levels. Today's stock market, in the opinion of this author, has numerous examples of rock-solid companies whose prices have collapsed simply because they are in a sector whose bubble has burst. He goes on to conclude, whatever happens on the political front, we will survive it. There will be challengers and disasters in the coming years, and the losers will inevitably blame the winners. Things, indeed, may not be as good as they could be, but true collapses of the type predicted by both sides, by either political party, are extremely rare. What should an investor do in these uncertain times? The great J.P. Morgan told a worried advice seeker during a market rout back in the time where J.P. survived and lived during the Depression, sell to the point where you can sleep at night. I would add, make sure you're diversified and have a cash position, in my opinion, significant cash position, percentage unsaid. So when the market does fall, you have some dry powder to pick up some good buys. And another Warren Buffett aphorism, time is the friend of the wonderful company and the enemy of the mediocre. This is the time, so says this author, to focus on the strongest companies, the best in class in their industries, especially if they've been beaten down because all stocks in their sector are being shunned. Stronger companies usually emerge from tumultuous times stronger than before, simply because weaker rivals have suffered more or have gone away altogether. All companies are not created equal. Some have better management, unique products, and stronger financial balance sheets. He's also advising be especially careful with respects to companies that have large earnings component in foreign currencies. It's a little bit more complicated. I think we'll skip the explanation of that today. And if you are a dividend investor, so says this article, pay attention to the company's dividend coverage. Are they paying out more than they are earning? If so, how are they financing their shortfall and how vulnerable are they to cutting their dividend or eliminating it altogether? We have seen some of that, especially in the energy sector. A lot of companies have cut their dividend or eliminated them. And so, as always, if you don't know how to reach a balance sheet, there are financial advisors out there to help you. Investment professionals, as Ayer said. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back with more market analysis.
We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny.
And you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station, our interactive economic forum. My name is Mark Cuniberti, your host today. And we are on our 228th hour-long show entitled Spring 2016 Update. I got an interesting article here, interesting, from the 5-Minute Forecast from Agora Financial. AgoraFinancial.com is their website. From their article, 5-Minute Forecast, dated March 1st, 2016. Another year, another failed audit for Uncle Sam. Funny you haven't heard any of the other presidential candidates talk about this failed audit. Since 1997, the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, has audited the Federal Reserve. We had the head of that office, David Walker, on an interview many, many years ago. After he left, it was a very interesting article, very interesting show and interview. Anyway, 5-Minute Forecast says Government Accountability Office, the GAO, has tried to audit the federal books. However, it never works out. Try as the auditors might come up with an opinion on the government's consolidated financial statements, the numbers are just too murky. This year, there were issues with the Department of Defense's finances, the government's inability to account for some transactions, and the government's ineffective reporting preparing process as described by Beltway insider publication The Hill. In simple terms, more than a third of your government is a black hole, sum up Pam and Russ Martins at their Wall Street on Parade website. Wall Street on Parade. The GAO, the Government Accountability Office, said it was unable to effectively audit 34% of the federal government's reported assets as of September 30th, 2015, and unable to effectively audit approximately 19% of the federal government's reported net costs for the fiscal year 2015. In fact, the number of agencies whose bookkeeping is backsliding is growing. Nearly every cabinet department got a clean opinion in 2014, but in 2015, defense, agriculture, and housing and urban development couldn't pass muster. The Pentagon, so says this article from the 5-Minute Forecast, is a special case. It's been a bookkeeping disaster for the last 20 years. Back in 1990, Congress passed a law requiring all federal agencies to be audited annually. The Pentagon was required to comply by 1996. It blew the deadline and has remained in violation ever since, said Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld the day before the September 11th attacks. According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions. By the end of 2013, the untrackable transactions had swelled to $8.5 trillion dating back to 1996. 2009, Congress passed yet another law setting a new deadline for the Pentagon to be audit ready, 2017, next year. But in the law, there were no or else consequences attached to the deadline. As it is, the Pentagon has no fewer than 2,100 accounting systems spread across the armed services and various agencies. Few of them are capable of talking to each other. New systems were canceled, often after $1 billion or more was spent on each. I guess they're referring to new weapon systems. Some of the more read-it-and-weep facts and figures from the GAO's audit. The PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, a quasi-governmental agency to take on failed pensions from large corporations. Its liabilities, what it owed, exceeded its assets by $76 billion. If you're one of the lucky few who still has a traditional corporate pension, the PBGC is the agency that guarantees it. You'll still be paid in the event your plan fails, hypothetically. Then there's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which the government took over during the panic of 2008. The GAO report says the reported maximum remaining contractual commitment to the government-sponsored enterprise Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, if needed, is $258 billion. That means that's how much money they're going to need, $250 billion. The GAO also tried to analyze the government's statements for sustainability. How long can the government pay its bills? It concluded, quote, cannot render an opinion. Thanks to, quote, significant uncertainties about achieving projected reductions in Medicare cost, the growth of Medicare cost, and a material weakness in internal controls over financial reporting. In other words, they don't do so well when they report their financials. If you had anything to do with an audit in the private sector, you know, quote, material weakness is a term you do not want to be told exists. If you do get told material weakness is exhibited, you will move in all deliberate speed to resolve it ASAP so the auditors don't start wondering if you're another Enron or WorldCom in the making. But this is the federal government we're talking about, so says the 5-minute forecast. So the presidential candidates don't feel compelled to talk about it. One-third of the government is a black hole. Business as usual. Even the candidate who touts his private sector prowess isn't talking about it. Asked last week during a debate what he'd do to reduce the budget, Donald Trump replied, waste, fraud, and abuse all over the place. Waste, fraud, and abuse. Five-minute forecast goes on to say, seriously, dude? That's what every politician says when he or she doesn't want to get specific about spending cuts or tax increases. The government has a lot bigger problems than waste, fraud, and abuse when trillions in transactions have no paper or electronic trail. Remember, we're talking about trillions here. 34% of the federal government's reported assets were unable to be effectively audited. Oh. What's that? Multiple trillions of dollars? And to the markets from the 5-minute forecast. Stocks are in rally mode, so they say. Either because the economy is getting weaker or getting better. Weak manufacturing data globally raises hopes of a further easing of monetary policy, says Reuters News. And they say, being the first of the month, we're getting a fix on the state of world factories. With this number, 50 is the dividing line. Higher numbers above 50 indicate manufacturers growing. Lower than 50 means it's shrinking. China, 49.0, down from 49.4. According to these figures, its economy is shrinking. It's the lowest reading since November 2011. Eurozone, 51.2. That is a positive, but it is down from 52.3 from the month before and the lowest reading in a year. Industrial Service Manufacturing Survey in the United States rings in at 49.5. in contraction. That's up from 48.2 the previous month and better than the expert consensus was counting on, the expert's consensus. CNBC is quoting some Wall Street flunkies saying the ISM numbers adds another piece of evidence we're not falling into a recession anytime soon, and that's why the market is rallying. Reuters, however, attributes the rally in the market to weak numbers globally and therefore the prospect of monetary stimulus. Good news is bad news. If the economy's crappy, the feds will come in and offer more stimulus, so we drive the market higher. If the market is good, it means the feds will back off on monetary stimulus and the market falls lower. That's kind of reversed, isn't it? Numbers on the markets. Treasuries are selling off. Yields are spiking. 10-year note from the Treasury is to 1.82%. Loan your money to the U.S. Treasury Department, you get 1.82% a year. Gold is rallying a little bit, around 1,250 somewhere an ounce. Up a couple hundred bucks from its low. Remains to be seen whether that rally will continue, but it is looking stronger than it has in many, many years. Crude is up off its low. And, of course, the Dow is still meandering around today once again. Still under the 17,000 level, so we'll see if that holds or not. 17,000 has now become a resistance point. Dow's at 16,938, so it has to take on 17,000 like a gate on a hurdler. And, of course, we have to weigh in on Apple. As you know, the feds are trying to get Apple to unlock its phone. Specifically, the phone in question is the phone from the San Bernardino murderers. The Fed wants to, FBI wants, of course, Apple to rewrite its code. Apple is refusing. Apple is saying if we unlock the code, anybody can unlock the code. Many people are against the fact that they don't want Apple to unlock the code, and we will see who wins. Microsoft learned a similar lesson 20 years ago. Justice Department hit it with an antitrust lawsuit. Microsoft was not a lobbyist back then. Bill Gates didn't believe in lobbying until the Justice Department hit it with an antitrust suit. Now, Microsoft's lobbying budget is nearly double that of Apple's. Facebook is even higher, and Google spent $17 million on lobbying last year, nearly four times as much as Apple. What do you think of the lobbying situation? Do you think companies should spend money to convince your elected congressman to make a decision one way or the other? United States just imposed up to 266% tax tariffs on foreign steel coming from various foreign countries. So steel is now going to be taxed, if it's coming from a foreign country, up to 266% in a tariff rate. That money doesn't go to you. It goes into the government coffers. But if you're using steel and it is coming from overseas, you will pay more. What do you think about tariffs? U.S. Steel, and they're the U.S. company, of course, got behind it because it protects their American jobs. But the bottom line is the money goes into government coffers, probably into their general fund for them to spend. And so we're coming to the conclusion of the show. And before we go, talking about inflationary prices, so says 5-minute forecast. Prices in Canada for products usually readily available ingredients like wheat, flour, milk, and eggs have actually not gone up very much. Bread, potatoes, meat have not increased very much. I'm not quite seeing that in my shopping market. Are you? Fresh vegetable prices have gone through the roof. With oil prices so low, you'd wonder why vegetable prices are rising. But do you see a lot of inflation in your shopping list? I sure see it in mine. So looking at the Dow before we close the show, Dow 16,936. Remember that the 17,000 level is difficult. So that'll be a resistance area. We'll keep a track on the market so you don't have to. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back to conclude the show. Tune to Money Matters on your community radio station. Thanks for joining me today. My name's Mark Cunaberti with another edition of Money Matters. This has been the 228th edition. Unbelievable. It's a lot of hours. Over 1,000-something newscasts, Money Matters newscasts, and thousands of articles throughout different publications you can find. My name is Mark Cunaberti. You can email the program director at your station for questions about shows on your community radio station. And if it's about this show, they will forward the email to me. Keep in mind, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific investment advice or recommendations. Always consult with your financial investment professional before making important investment decisions. Myself, I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed on Money Matters are my opinions only or the opinions of the articles and authors quoted. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff members, or underwriters. Stay tuned for more fine programming on your community radio station. God bless and have a great day.
This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests and our opinions only and may not represent those of this station, its staff members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.